Joint Senate and House Education Committee meeting to order at 8 a.m. Welcome, everyone. It's a packed house today. Good to see you all. This morning, we have with us Senator Geisel, Senator Stevens, Senator Begich, and myself, Chair Hughes, and I will represent Drummond if you'd like to take attendance of your members.
Thank you, Madam Senator. Present in House Education this morning are Vice Chair Representative Justin Parrish, Representative Dave Tallarico, Representative Chuck Kopp, Representative Jennifer Johnson, Representative Ivy Sponholz, and Representative Zach Fansler.
Thank you, Co-Chair Drummond. So let's remind everyone, cell phone etiquette. We know the rules. I want to thank those assisting us today. They always do a great job. Today, as you can guess, we're going to hear from the Alaska Council of School Administrators to hear about some of the professional development that the council offers teachers and other school district employees. We'll also be hearing from administrators representing districts throughout the state. And at this point, I'd like to invite Lisa Parody, the Executive Director, to begin your presentation, and I want to recognize that Senator Coghill has joined us. Good morning, Dr. Parody.
Good morning, Madam Chair, through the Chair, and good morning, committee members. Thank you so much for this opportunity to be with you this morning. As you stated, Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Skiles Parody. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and we are the umbrella organization for four of Alaska's premier educational leadership organizations: the Alaska Superintendents Association, the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals, the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, and the Alaska Association of School Business Officials, all of which are here today, and you'll be hearing from the leadership of those organizations as well, so I won't take time to introduce them as they will be introducing themselves. But I do want to note that ACSA is a nonprofit, tax-exempt corporation that was established in 1973. So we've been providing these services and working in unity for a very long time. We have two purposes, kind of a bifurcated purpose. The first is advocacy, and we work in concert with other organized groups across Alaska to advocate for our students and families. I kind of think of the three listed on the slide, the School Boards Association, our teachers, and us as kind of the organized voices for education. And what we really do have in common is that all of us are working every day to support students and families in Alaska. The other part of that purpose is professional learning. And you can see on our slide that the Alaska Staff Development Network is circled. The Alaska Staff Development Network is a nonprofit that the Alaska Council of School Administrators administers. It provides quality professional development opportunities for Alaskan educators through face-to-face and distance learning programs, and it's been doing that for almost 35 years. So you can see that these organizations have long-standing history in Alaska, and I believe you have a handout of a catalog before you, and it can describe some of the things that we do, but today we're going to focus in on what's called the Alaska Professional Learning Network. Throughout the year, we help over 3,500 Alaskan educators. That's about 30% of the state's professional staff. We do 5,000 to 6,000 classes a year to support them, largely in rural Alaska, but throughout the state. We have over 60 online and blended courses each year, and again, it serves a lot of those folks in the rural districts. And we partner. We partner in many ways with our districts, depending on their needs, with NEA Alaska, again, with their needs, university. By way of example, the university needed to organize a counseling class, so they reached out to us to help us to do that. We're an arm that is prepared and ready to deliver professional learning. And so organizations in Alaska tend to know that and be able to reach out to us to do so. But today, the partnership we want to focus on, because you've been focusing on it, is the Department of Education and Early Development. We do a lot of outreach efforts in concert with them, one of which is coming up next Friday. It is co-sponsoring a statewide meeting in Anchorage to collect feedback and input for the ESSA state plan. That meeting is open to everyone and anyone who is interested. Certainly invite you. I suspect you will be otherwise occupied, but your staff or anyone that you think might be interested are welcome. It is one statewide opportunity that the department felt would be critical at a point to collect feedback for that ESSA plan, and we're delighted to partner in that. Another one we want to highlight today is the Alaska Professional Learning Network. This is an effort that is open to all K-12 educators in the state for free. I know this group is interested in virtual learning, so we wanted to share this specific project out of the many that we do to give you a flavor of some of the work that we provide. So with me today is Bobby Jo Erb. She's a self-proclaimed math geek. currently, she works with math education with districts in Alaska and other states on best practices in mathematics instruction. And I'll let her go ahead and introduce herself a little bit more.
Good morning. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. For the record, my name is Bobby Jo Erb, and I
hold the mic just a little closer.
Sure. I can do that. For the record, my name is Bobby Jo Erb, and I work with educators around the state on improving math instruction. I also come to this from a variety of lenses. I have over 20 years of education experience in the state of Alaska. I've been a longtime classroom teacher. I served as the executive director of curriculum instruction for the Anchorage School District. And most recently, I've had the wonderful opportunity to travel to some more of our rural sites. So I have been lucky enough to work with some of the largest schools in our state and also some of the smallest schools in our state.
For the record, again, this is Lisa Parody. I'd like to also introduce the administrator of the Alaska Staff Development Network, Kathy Blank, who will join Bobby Jo at the table.
Thank you. So for the record, Bobby Jo Erb. So I've seen the challenges and the joys that our educators face around the state, and one of the challenges that I've noticed is an isolation. It is very difficult if you are the only secondary math teacher in a school site to be able to learn and collaborate and grow as an educator unless you can collaborate with other educators around the state. So I'm here to talk about ACPLN, which is the Alaska Professional Learning Network. I'm going to sound like a salesperson for this, but I'm not. I'm just an educator who's had the opportunity to use this resource in numerous ways, and I'm tremendously excited about what this does for our educators, and not just teachers, but principals, district personnel, education organizations. It's just a wonderful place to collaborate. So what is ACPLN? ACPLN is an online professional collaboration space. It is a statewide partnership between the Alaska Department of Education and ACSA, which is the Alaska Council of School Administrators. It's also a partnership with the Teaching Channel. So lots of people coming together to provide this. It is funded through the Alaska Council of School Administrators with some support from federal Title II funds that are administered by the State Department of Education. So that's where the funding comes from. It's available at no cost to all Alaska educators. And I think that that's an important piece. First and foremost, this is a network of Alaska educators. So on that slide, you can see just a sampling of the educators who are already engaging in the resources that are available on ACPLN. And right now, we have over 750 educators around the state, and I anticipate that that will grow very rapidly. The data that I will show you towards the end of this shows that people are not only going to the site, but they're coming back because there's so many resources that are available to them. This is also, and this is very critical, a space for only Alaska educators. It's our space to talk about education for our state and for our students, and I think that's a very powerful piece of the collaboration. So what can educators do on this site? First of all, they have videos. There are over 1,300 videos from classrooms that are kindergarten through 12th grade. They cover any number of subject areas and instructional practices that are very important. That's a sampling on the far right of just some of the videos that are posted. The other part of this, and we start with this very rich collection of videos that exist, but we also have the capability to upload videos of Alaska educators and of artifacts from Alaskan classrooms. So this really can be tailored and will be tailored to meet Alaskan needs. Teachers can get ideas for lessons and instructional strategies, and they can create or join groups where they can connect and collaborate on professional learning experiences. And so this is really huge. I traveled out to Wales, a very small school site, and some of the teachers that I worked with really are on their own in terms of the content that they teach and the grade levels that they teach. So I was able to connect, I can connect those educators with other educators around the state who do a similar job. And that's really crucial. I think it helps with the isolation, and I think ultimately it's going to increase teacher effectiveness and teacher retention, just being able to reach out and have the space. This is really a place for very modern, very personalized professional learning, and teachers can access this without traveling anywhere. They can access it from online, leveraging the tech tools that we have. So I want to talk to you about the groups that they can form. We have a fairly large number of existing groups, and educators are the 750 educators that I talked about are engaging in learning on these groups. The groups look like this. You can see that there's any number of things focusing on text structures to extending some of the face-to-face learning that's occurred. The main groups that exist right now are in-depth study of the content and instructional strategies. There's also extension of face-to-face learning. There's the ability to create a more blended environment with webinars when we do professional learning webinars. And there are districts who are forming or have formed groups for the purpose of collaboration and professional learning for their district. And I'll explain a little bit more about each of those pieces. Another part, so you've got the collection of videos. There are deep dives, what they call deep dives, where a teacher can go in and say, I really want to learn about this strategy, and there's a series of videos that all address that strategy. But we also have these, and they have the groups, we also have these learning pathways. And these are homegrown, designed specifically for Alaska educators. And basically the pathways contain learning plans. They're like little mini trainings that guide teachers through, and they can form together and discuss the learning pieces that they have in that learning plan. There are four steps that I'll talk about in just a second. Right now, there are over 60 pathways that exist, and much of that work has been done in language arts and in math, but there's the potential to do this in any subject area. We can do learning pathways that are focused on instructional strategies, maybe meeting the needs of English language learners, culturally responsive practices. There's any number of things that we can do based on what schools and districts need the most. So a learning plan is set up around an area of focus of interest to teachers or principals. It has four steps. The first step, and these are the four steps, the first step is a welcome. And this is a place for them to create the environment in which they're going to collaborate. They have to get to know each other if it's going to be an online virtual space. It's been fascinating to watch conversations between rural and urban educators. And as they talk about what they face in their classroom and the environments they teach in, it's been a great place for kind of getting to know each other that way. Step two is where you decide that you create the focus of the pathway. And this step is where you can bring in current research on best practices for that particular focus. So it's a way of getting some really high quality research into the hands of our teachers across the state. The third part, they watch a series of videos or read articles that are all surrounding this topic. And the fourth part is the part that makes it more hands-on. Each teacher or principal chooses something to put into place in their setting. And then they come back to collaborate with the other educators on what went well, what didn't go well, and what could they do to improve it. So our teachers have indicated across the state that they want five things in professional learning. They want it to be relevant, hands-on, sustained, collaborative, and job-embedded. That's all they ask. Why I get excited about this is that this is a way for us to make it relevant, because teachers go in, principals go in, they choose what they're going to focus on, whether they want to just watch one video or go through an entire learning plan or entire pathway. They decide what's going to be relevant to them. And then it's hands-on, because the intent for all of the pieces of this is that they try it on in their classrooms. They're changing their practice and improving their practice through this. And the comments that have been coming back are showing that, are highlighting that they're actually changing practice and improving what's going on. So why am I excited about ACTLAN, and why do I think you should be too? It's because of how it's already being used in the state. As an educator, we see all sorts of things come at us, and then some of it stays and a lot of it goes. That's just kind of the nature of education. What I'm seeing is that teachers and principals are starting to use this resource, and they're coming back and doing more and more of it. We're not getting people visiting once and then leaving. It actually seems to be engaging our educators across the state. So here's some of the ways it's being used. Every year in January, we have the Alaska Effective Instruction Conference, and this is where educators from all over the state come to Anchorage for 3 days of exciting and intense learning about best practices for instruction. The hard part with this is how do you, and I've attended as a teacher, I've attended as a district level person, and I've attended as an instructor at the conference. How do you maintain that level of excitement and learning past the 3 days? Well, one of the things that happened this year is that groups were formed on ACTLAN, and over 200 conference participants participated in 6 discussion topics, over 800 posts, to extend that learning that they had during that weekend. Another way that we are extending learning that has already been occurring is through the use of webinars. So I've done several webinars for the state. This year I did a four-part webinar series over the course of 8 weeks. Normally I would just do the webinars, and I would just see the participants at the webinar. This year we formed a group on ACTLAN. So what I was able to do is I would do the first webinar, I would do instruction for an hour and a half. After that, I would suggest videos or readings or things that they could do. And so in between the webinars, the teachers in the group were watching those videos, responding to them, collaborating, trying things on in their classroom, talking about what's going well, what challenges they face. I was able to use that information then to then guide the content for the next webinar. So I felt like I was much more effective as an instructor, because I could give them exactly what they needed when they needed it. And I think it was a much more powerful learning experience. We already have districts and schools who are using ACTLAN in very exciting ways. So Upriver Schools in Cuspuck, I understand that there is one principal for 4 school buildings, which is a challenge. And so that principal is using ACTLAN as a communication device and has actually written it into the school improvement plan, which is an exciting way to use it. Juneau School District has a district-wide technology initiative, so teachers have received Chromebooks, and they are using a group on ACTLAN to share resources with each other and discuss ways to have more effective instruction. Lower Kuskokwim School District has a classroom management focus, so each of their sites has a person who's acting as a coach. Those coaches are collaborating, watching videos, doing virtual coaching through the ACTLAN site so that they can continue with that initiative. And then Bering Strait School District this year will be embedding ACTLAN and the learning plans into their professional development for both math and literacy. And their intent is to provide groups to support not only teachers, but also a leadership development group to support their principals. So there's some very powerful ways that this is being used. Just some quick data for you. This shows the number of site visits. So it starts in September, but we have been getting the word out. And as the word gets out, you'll notice in January we're seeing an increase in the number of people visiting the site. That I would expect, just because people are going to visit because they want to see what's going on. This is the part that really excites me. Not only are they going there, but they're actively engaging in the content. So these are the number of video plays that they were able to track during that same time period. And we've been receiving great feedback from the educators around the state. Not only do they like the format, but their comments indicate that they are actively working at changing and improving their practice.
Bobby Joe, I'm going to interrupt for just a minute. I just want to let folks know there is an empty seat in the third row over here by the window. If someone would like to to come on over. No need to stand.
And I'd like to recognize that Representative Laura Reinbold has joined us.
All right. So continue.
That's it. That's what I had.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. And we appreciate learning or been hearing about Acklin. It sounds like what we're thinking about virtual education, but for teachers and administrators. Are there any questions? Representative Johnston.
Yes.
Yeah, it is working.
I was just wondering, as far as your pathways, do you put any caps on the number of involvements? In other words, do you go up to 20 and then set up a MOOC pathway, or is it unlimited?
Through the chair? The answer is that...
Look this way.
Sorry about that. I know, very I put the microphone. There isn't really a cap, but generally what happens is there are groups who decide they're going to pursue that learning plan together. And so keeping it a little bit smaller makes it so that there's a little bit more collaboration that goes on. Honestly, we're somewhat at the beginning phases of this, so I imagine that all of that will sort of evolve as we go through the process.
Okay, thank you. Senator Begich.
Bobby Joe, just a quick question on the slide before, the two before, one more. Back this way, one. There. What accounts for the increase in the video starting in February?
Through the chair. The increase occurred, I think, mostly because we started the conference that occurred in January, and then also the webinar series started. And so you're going to, anytime we have an active conference or we have active groups because of webinar series or that sort of thing, you're going to see an increase in that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you. My question was answered. Thank you.
That's right. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Bobby Joe. I can sense your enthusiasm. Is this something that I could access as chair of education just to take a look, or do I need a password or something like that? I think it would definitely educate members of these two committees as to what's available for teachers, and it just sounds wonderful.
Through the chair, I'm not 100% certain, but I'm willing to bet that, yes, we can get you access to anyone on this committee who would like access.
Great. And I'm Thank seeing you. Dr. Parody shake her head yes, so I think we can okay, maybe so. Make that
Thank
happen.
You.
All right. Well, we have a lot on the agenda, so thank you very much. And next up, Mary McMahon, who's a principal, I believe, still at a school that's literally around the corner from my house and that my four children attended. So are you still at Colony Middle? Very good. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary McMahon. I currently serve as the president of ACSA, and I'm going to be talking to you about the advocacy side of things. I also serve as the president of the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals. So those are two roles that I serve in for throughout the state. But I want to tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a 43-year Alaskan, born and raised in Kodiak. I have three children in the education system, one that attends UAA and two that are in grade school still. My parents still live in Alaska. I am committed to Alaska. And one of the reasons I'm in education is because I received the teacher scholarship loan back when it was available. And that's why I'm here. And so I'm so grateful that I made that choice at the time, because I am living my truest, highest calling, love what I do every day, and you'll be able to hear why. So I would like to start with the joint position statements you all have in front of you. Mm-hmm. I chaired that committee this year, and so part of that committee is bringing together the superintendents, the business officials, the school principals, all of Alaska's leaders, and we develop a strong team to come up with what matters most to us and what do we really care about, and what are we going to advocate for public education throughout the state together as a team. We also worked on our mission statement this year with ACSA, and it is leadership, unity, and advocacy for public education. And so we are coming here united as a team, saying this is what matters most to us. And you can look through it and just see that our number one priority is adequate funding and sustainable funding. And so that's at the very top. And then we've outlined some other things for you. We also have Some federal advocacy that we do. And so there's a few of us that are going to go to Washington, D.C. later this month and continue our work with advocacy. As the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals president, this is kind of a busy year for me serving as president of both of these large, important associations. I commit my time to this because I believe that we, as leaders, need to serve and support excellence in school leadership. And there is no room for mediocrity in our schools, in our leadership, with teachers or with our school leaders. Our kids deserve the best throughout the state. Mm-hmm. I started my teaching career in Kotzebue, Alaska. I spent seven years in rural Alaska. I now live in Palmer. I care about the entire state and the education of all of our kids. And so I am here and committed to this work to really serve and support as excellence in education at all levels because it's too important. What's happening in our schools today is determining the future of our state. And with that, I'm up here and I have to share a story about my kids because I get the rare opportunity every once in a while to go into the classroom and co-teach a lesson. But I was given that opportunity because there was this great turmoil in our eighth grade this year over the presidential election. And so we had some bully-like behaviors happening. And I said, okay, I'm going to jump right in and I'm going to co-teach this lesson with the teacher and here's how we're going to handle it. And I've got to tell you, what our kids came up with was amazing. So we went in and we thought long and hard, how do we teach our kids to behave better than what they're seeing in the news with adults? And so this is what we did. We said, we're going to ask them a couple questions, but the most important question is, what do great leaders do to move organizations and societies forward? And we just put that out there to kids, put them in groups, and this is what they came up with. Our eighth grade students said, and I want you to consider this as you are making tough decisions during really difficult times. They said, great leaders learn from past mistakes and know what is good for all people. They make valid points and get things done. They take a stand for what is right, even if they stand alone. They have great ideas that involve and build community. They keep their promises and follow through. They underpromise and overdeliver. They take initiative and are willing to make tough decisions. They are optimistic and remain calm. They have integrity. They are open to ideas and other cultures and work toward a goal instead of being complacent. They make promises they can keep. They think of others before themselves, and they are not selfish. They use peace and uplifting messages to move communities forward. They collaborate with others. They make decisions that are good for everyone, not just one group. They look for the good in others. They think through things and create common goals. They work together for all of humanity. And they make people feel safe and bring people together for positive change. So I'm just going to leave you with that today, and I have copies of this article that I wrote because it really comes down to our kids and what we need to do for them. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mary. Was that a compilation of remarks made by students?
Absolutely. That's all eighth grade students. They are so bright and brilliant. Yes.
Yeah, that's great. Representative Johnson?
It proves the point that we all should be very optimistic because we have a great group coming along. I have a question, and maybe this is might not be the right time, but so you have the ACSA, and then you have the four groups underneath. And some of the groups seem to have executive directors. So how different are each of the mission statements?
Through the chair, I can answer that, or Lisa Parody, our executive director for ACSA, could.
Okay.
So the question is, how different are each of the mission statements? I would say that we all have a very common mission statement, and that's to provide excellence in what we do at all levels. And as we come here together, we do have separate goals and separate priorities. But together, you'll see in our joint position statements that we are united. We are united in doing what's best for our kids. Business officials are right there with us. we're all doing this tough work together and coming together in a way that I just see as beautiful.
Thank you.
Quick follow-up. I'd be interested to see the breakdown of your goals amongst different groups.
Okay. Through the chair, I believe we can get that to you.
Yes, and we'll get it distributed. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just can't pass this moment up. Mary's family has been an important part of Alaska for so long. And when she mentioned integrity, thinking of others, not selfish, I thought of her grandfather, Captain Fault. A true hero, a submarine captain in World War II. Should be proud.
Thank you very much. And next we have Sean Dusak is up, and he'll be followed by Deanna Beck. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chairwoman Hughes, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sean Dusak, and I did bring with me Dan Carstens. He's a principal at Nikiski High School, and he's also the president-elect of the Secondary School Principals Association. I am the superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and I'm also the president of the Alaska Superintendents Association, soon to be past president. Looking forward to that. Anyway, Dr. Parody's excited too. I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about my organization. I'm very fortunate in that I represent one of the largest constituencies on the peninsula, our students. We have close to 9,000 students in our school district. And you've heard from me before, and you've heard from some of our board members as well. And we're extremely proud of our district, obviously. We have a lot happening. A lot of innovation. Our graduation rate is doing well. And you've heard from some of our teachers with Classroom Without Walls. Those type of innovations are happening. And again, it's similar around the state. There are pockets of excellence. And I think what you're finding, though, is that we're all committed to improving. And we're excited to work with you on that. And we want to be a part of the conversation at all times. When we talk about our school district, this is one statistic that I talk about fairly frequently, and I believe that our diploma is meaningful, and I'll show you why here in a minute. But I want you to notice that in the school year of 2012, that coincides with really the first year of full implementation of the current funding formula. We went through several years in our district where we were basically at the base in terms of cost differential. And we have schools, if you're not familiar with our district, across the water, Nanwalek, Port Graham, Tyonek. Just because of the nature of where they're located, it costs a lot more. So we're not just a road system school. We're a microcosm of the state. I was talking with Representative Kopp before the meeting. He was one of the foundations of the Kenai. He's very heavily involved down there. I believe he grew up there and helped build what we have now on the peninsula. And so he understands, and I believe you all understand too, the challenges that we have, and we're making it work. I think our district, you know, we're certainly not the best, but we're getting there, and we are proving that it can be done around the state just based on our example of how we look according to the rest of the state of Alaska. But I wanted to point out, since we've been funded appropriately and adequately, we are taking off. We're putting things in place professional development wise now that we're moving from the textbooks that are basically generated for kids in California and Texas to building our own that's living and breathing online, accessible anywhere, anytime. We do have some infrastructure issues, in terms, just like everybody else in the state. And we're hoping that you will help solve that as we move forward. But we also believe in professional development as a priority, because regardless of if we're able to hire the natural teacher that we all want, we have teachers who want to get better. And the only way they're going to get better is a commitment and an investment in them. And so that's what we're looking forward to doing as we can continue to progress. Here's an interesting statistic from our school district that I'm not sure if we shared with you before, but we have a number of kids that are earning industry-recognized certifications. You can see some of them, like the OSHA and the HAZWOPR and the Cook Inlet Training Standards. That gets kids into high-paying, high-demand jobs, which right now they're not that high demand in Alaska, unfortunately. Hopefully that will turn around soon. But those are huge, and we're able to offer that. Part of the reason why we're able to offer that is we are strongly partnered with Kenai Peninsula College. We have a program you've heard of before, Jumpstart, that our borough helps fund credits, college credits for our students, and we're going to try to expand that with UA. I know that's been a conversation. Are kids really ready for college? I believe they are, particularly if you go beyond a single test to place them in a particular course. I believe that as we continue to partner with UA, we will be able to show a high rate of credit acquisition immediately. And we had a great conversation with the president of UA yesterday, and we're moving forward, and we're excited about it. Again, we need your support to be able to pull that off. So again, just wanted to remind you, the peninsula, I know it looks kind of small when you compare it to the state of Alaska. It is the size of West Virginia, though, which is amazing. Lots of road miles, lots of opportunity to get the full Alaskan experience just south of Anchorage. And we are doing great things. You know that, and you've complimented the Kenai on that. But keep in mind, this is happening everywhere. And as we continue to partner and with other districts, we're looking forward to a lot of exciting things happening in Alaska. And I really wanted to end this up by saying, you know, I really appreciate what Commissioner Johnson's been doing. I'm hopeful that you will support the Alaska Challenge process, allow that process to work through to really drive the next step in improvement across our state. So with that, we're happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Senator Begich.
Superintendent Dusek, I'm going to ask you the uncomfortable question. There's one proposal on the table that's passed one of the bodies that slices 5%, over 5% from the base student allocation. You just showed a graphic that you directly tied to the formula. What will be the impact of that reduction? Do you perceive what the impact of that reduction would be if it were to actually become law?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I know that there's been a kind of a simple explanation of a nickel on a dollar cut. And really, I view that nickel on a dollar, that supposed nickel cut, really is going to create a dollar's worth of problems for our kids. I.e., we're looking at 50 teachers. That's a $5 million cut. And depending upon how that works itself out, because we're a borough-operated, funded school district, that will also limit or reduce the amount of money that the borough can support us with. So it's, in effect, a double cut to us. And when it's over 5%, now you're talking, when we talk about 50 teachers potentially losing their positions, that will reach into our tenured staff, potentially. So that creates a whole other set of problems. And if we just were to focus on our non-tenured staff, which is typically the ones that leave, they're typically younger, they have families, and they leave. So it's just a continual spiral downward. Now, we have the mantra in our district, whatever happens, we're going to make it work. We're going to do the best that we possibly can. But when I showed you those certificates that were earned, those are the type of programs, though, that will suddenly become in jeopardy. Because you can only do so much online. You have to have a person available to work with a student. We work hard on Skype. We work hard with video conferencing. We've moved to a lot of our professional development opportunities to be online to save money so that we can keep it in the classroom. But those are the type of programs that would be in jeopardy.
Appreciate that answer. Thank you.
And I'll follow that up with a question. I've heard from superintendents across the state that the rising health care cost is is the biggest driver, the most concerning. If we are able to work something out that we can relieve the state, relieve the districts of that, I actually hope that perhaps we could have worked that out this year, but we're waiting on a report that's due out this summer. Is that something your district would be interested in?
Yeah, in the last several years, we've more than doubled on health insurance costs. So that is a major concern, and you've heard from me before. Please take a look at that as a way to help address these rising costs, because that the only place that money can come from is from the classroom. And again, it's not our staff's fault. This is just what's being charged. And as somebody's pointed out, with America being the highest health care costs in the world and Alaska being the highest in the country, that makes us number one in the world in health care costs. That is not the stat that I want. And I know you don't either, so that would be a conversation that we'd be very interested in being at the table with you to go through to figure out how we can alleviate that cost to get that money back in the classroom.
I will appreciate that, and stay tuned because we are going to work on that. We need to keep moving. We have quite a few speakers left, so thank you very much, gentlemen. And next is Deanna Beck, who will be followed by Holly Holman. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Deanna Beck. I am the president of the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals. And I just a little bit about myself is I've been an Alaskan for 10 years. However, I first visited Alaska 20 years ago when I was active duty in the Coast Guard and fell in love with the state. I got to visit Juneau and Kodiak, and now I live in Anchorage. I'm married to a third-generation Alaskan, and I'm the proud parent of a fourth-generation Alaskan. So it's my distinct pleasure to have the opportunity to share with you what we are doing in schools today. Since the early beginnings of schools, education professionals have strived to impart knowledge and prepare students for the future. However, now more than ever, we face the challenge of how to prepare our students for a competitive and changing world. A world in which the pace of technological advancement is unprecedented, and discovery of information doubles as little as every 2 years. This means that nearly half of what a typical student starting at a four-year technical college degree is expected to learn their first 2 years is outdated by their third year. With this in mind, we now prepare students for a future which we can't anticipate. We teach them skills that will empower them to continue to learning through their entire lives. To do this, we focus on the needs of all students and provide challenging learning in order to meet their full potential. We foster rigor and perseverance. We focus on grit and resiliency. Instead of requiring mere memorization and information recall, we encourage students to question their assumptions and to think deeply. These are skills that will serve our students as well as they become adults in our state. These will be the employees that don't give up, that are innovative in developing solutions to problems that we cannot even fathom as we sit here today. Additionally, we are doing this with learners who have a wide variety of needs. Learning has become more personalized as we meet the needs of our community, our families, and our students. For example, in Anchorage, we are able to meet the needs of a multitude of choice through a multiple choice of schools. The variety ranges from schools such as mine, which we have a back-to-basics approach. We also have open optional. We have immersion options in STEM-based schools, as well as schools that provide resources for home school preferences. So in summary, today's schools are responding to the needs of our students and their families from where they sit, from where they are today, and implementing a variety of programs which enable our students to be lifelong learners in order to meet the demands of future employment and the success of the state of Alaska. And the ACSA, the joint position statements that we all voted on as individual committees, that we all come together, and this supports this need for this future that we need to support.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Beck? It's exciting, and it's also a little scary to think about how we have to prepare kids not knowing what kind of problems they'll be solving. I have a question just because I'm one of the things that has made America what it is entrepreneurs.
Yes.
And I did some reading a year or two ago that we we do a lot of testing in the schools to discover the content that the students have retained and what they're prepared for. But the particular author, and I'd have to dig to find the name and, of the author in the book, I'm not recalling it at the moment, said what we need to do is in the grade school and high schools, we need to figure out how to test and figure out those students who will be our future entrepreneurs, because the rate has gone down compared to other countries in the world, and that's one of the things that we need in America to foster. And you mentioned that you're, part of what you're trying to do is to develop students who will be resilient and will dig for information. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on that, because there's a particular character set that someone who's willing, that thinks out of the box, willing to try something that may or may not be successful and get back up again. And, you know, if Alaska could be a state that could pinpoint those students and help develop that, that would be wonderful for the future of our state, for strengthening our economy. And just based on your remarks, do you have any comments on how we might be able to foster students that might have those kind of future pathways?
Yes, we work on employability skills as a whole. However, some key pieces that we do is, like, I'm sure that when many of us went to school, our teachers would tell us, you know, you need to learn these facts and you'll memorize your times tables because you're not going to have a computer in your pocket or a calculator in your pocket. Well, guess what we do? In fact, we have whole computers in our pockets. And so we do have to start having them think differently. And so, you know, we do a lot of, we do some project-based learning, we do some collaborative groupings, so students have to work together. Because that's one thing they have to work on, is working with others. You're not going to be just isolated, you know, in a cubicle necessarily. You're going to be working with others, as we are here today. But also with that, we give them problems that there's not one solution. There's multiple solutions to a problem. So how they get to the answer is more important than the answer itself. And so it's those answers that, again, that they're not that one solution, that they have to really persevere and ask questions and consider and think about in order to get to that, to a solution that feels good to them. And then they have to justify it. How did you get there? And so through all those methods, they really have to, you know, dig deep. And it's actually really tough for some of our learners who are used to just getting the right answer the first time. They don't get it right the first time. And they have to learn to fail and how to pick themselves back up and try again.
Well, thank you for that response. And since we've got so many educators, I'll just really challenge all of you across the state to think about my question, and if there's a way, really, as you do these projects and the skills are being developed, there are those students that are going to kind of rise up and have a particular set of traits that, if they could be fostered, maybe paired with people in the business community, that I think it just would be a really good thing. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And our next speaker is Holly Holman. If you would come forward, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Chair Hughes and Chair Drummond and Senators and Representatives, for having us at this joint education meeting. For the record, my name is Holly Holman. I'm the business manager at Unalaska City School District, and I'm this year's Alaska Association of School Business Officials president, or ALASBO. The acronym is ALASBO. I wanted to introduce my ALASBO members that are here, but I can't really see in the back. So if I could just ask ALASBO members to wave or maybe stand up that are in the room. Thank you very much. The members of ALASBO work in the school business offices of the K-12 districts. They work on budgets, financial reporting, grant administration, payroll, purchasing, E-rate, bus contracts, and have a hand in just about any aspect of the school district operations that has a dollar sign associated with it. Our organization, ALASBO, is in its 45th year. Our 45th annual conference, which will be held in December of this year, provides a unique opportunity for members from across the state to meet for professional growth and sharing of ideas and concerns. Our mission is to promote the highest standards in school business practices, and our vision is educating stakeholders in the effective use of resources for the benefit of Alaska's children. Our values include ethical standards, sharing knowledge and expertise, accurate, objective, and consistent information, efficiency, and collaboration. I started as the business manager in Unalaska 26 years ago. I arrived on the island on a Friday, and unbeknownst to me, I started our annual audit on Monday. Thankfully, my superintendent at the time put me in touch with the LASBO members, and I instantly had a link to a wealth of information and fellow business managers that were willing and eager to share their knowledge with me. I knew I could pick up the phone, we weren't emailing at that time, and ask for help whenever I needed it. 26 years later, I can still pick up the phone or send an email and ask questions, but more often I answer questions to help our new business officials in any way I can. Just a little bit about our school district, Unalaska City School District. We have almost 100% graduation rate, almost zero dropout rate. We're a very successful school district. And like many districts around the state, we're putting our money right into the classroom. And so with the administrative services, it's important for us to be able to have networks where we can reach out, because we don't have a lot of staff, and especially in a small district like mine, very few staff members in our business office, just myself and a part-time person. So it's important to have that network and have that knowledge that we can reach out and obtain when we need it. ALASBO members recognize and are appreciative of the priority given to education funding in Alaska by you and your predecessors, so thank you very much. For the last decade, our association has advocated for a fiscal plan in our state. We see firsthand how predictable state and local revenues allow districts to operate most efficiently to meet student needs. A last-minute scramble over the summer to adjust budgets and programs and personnel is extremely difficult, and it becomes impossible to deliver the quality of programs our students deserve in a cohesive and effective and well-planned manner. ALASBO members collaborate with ACSA colleagues on our joint position statements, as we talked about earlier, and this year's joint position statements reflect our top priority positions on funding, as Mary mentioned earlier, for education and a revenue-enhanced fiscal plan. In addition to our collaboration with ACSA, ALASBO builds relationships with policymakers to serve as a resource regarding school funding issues. We help coordinate information gathering, such as for the current healthcare authority study, and we respond to questions regarding school funding and the impact of various proposals. The theme for our 2017 annual conference is Pulling Together for Alaska's Youth. And whether it's working together within our own districts to realize efficiencies, districts working together to share information, or supporting our professional organizations that help train and educate its members, we're all working toward one goal, and that's to educate Alaska's children. One of the ways ALASBO has been pulling together for our youth has been to offer our School Business Academy at our annual conference. It's an intensive pre-conference training session, kind of like a business boot camp, and it's held during our annual conference in December. Another way we've been working to help our members and school officials is we've developed the ALASBO Improvement Model, or we call it AIM. The model was developed to help guide improvements in accounting, audit, budget and planning, payroll, purchasing, risk management, and treasury and cash management. And the document is a rubric just in an Excel format, and it's right on our website, so it's a free resource for our members. And we also have a mentoring program where experienced members are paired with new members, and they attend the School Business Academy to confer throughout the year, and it's been very successful. The program is a bit more structured than when I first started in school business, but it achieves the same goal, to quickly move through school business officials through that steep learning curve to achieve our goals and realize efficiencies and best practices in school business. So whether with working with stakeholders to enhance understanding of our school district finances, providing professional development at our annual conference, developing a tool to facilitate improvements in the school business operations of schools, or one-on-one mentoring of our members, ALASBO is committed to pulling together for our youth in Alaska. So please feel free to contact ALASBO through our executive director, Amy Lujan. She's standing right there. And she lives right here in Juneau. And thank you so much for your time today and the work that all of you do for education in our state.
Thank you, Holly. Representative Johnston.
Yes, and you can keep looking that way, that's fine. We've brought up the challenges of health care. Have you as a LASBO considered taking all of your membership, all your school districts, and acting as a group to bid for health care?
Through the chair. Yes, we have. We have had many discussions about health care in our district. It's at 20 to 25% of our budget, and so it's just it's increased, like Superintendent Dusek said, just greatly throughout the last years. And but part of the problem, a lot of us are in groups. A lot of us are already in a pool. We're in a self-insured pool with our city and another school district in the state, and We feel like we provide excellent insurance for our employees. We feel like it's a recruiting and a retention tool. But the problem is, like Superintendent Dusek mentioned, that, is the costs are very high. And so, we feel like, we want to look at different alternatives, but we also want to recognize that each district is unique and their recruiting and retention is unique to each district. So we definitely want to look at saving costs there, though it's a real crisis.
Okay, Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the chair, you mentioned in your presentation how important it was for kind of predictable funding from year to year and steady funding. Could you speak more to what happens when that isn't a situation? What are kind of the losses that we're seeing when you have funding that changes from time to time throughout the every other year? So,
through the chair, that's an excellent question. I can speak for our district. We're hiring right now, and so it's hard to the Alaska teacher job fair already occurred. We have one position left. We're kind of in a wait and see mode on that. Last year we had 33 teachers. This year we have 29. We cut three positions. We had a drop in enrollment, and actually it's recovered some. And then we really held out hiring an ESL teacher this year, with the uncertainties, and we've just felt that pain this year. We have a very high ESL population. We have a lot of immigrant families, which we really believe is a strength for our district. It's a really rich community culturally, and my daughter's a senior there this year, and I just feel like that's been a huge advantage for her, and we feel like it's one of our strengths. But it has been hard without that position, and so you're waiting, and we don't know. We're trying to plan ahead for our health insurance. Our renewal is coming up, and I know other districts are the same because their renewal would be July 1st. You need to plan sports travel for the next year in order to get the best deals. Like I was talking about earlier with the efficiencies, if you have to wait to the last minute, just like with anything, like buying an airplane ticket, you have to pay full price then. You can't get a better deal. Or maybe with your fuel or your health insurance possibly. And certainly with teachers having to scramble at the last minute, that's the most important thing with our staffing and just having to wait. And then maybe there's nobody available if it's a position, say a special education position that's a hard-to-fill position. You just can't hire for that type of position in the summertime. They just aren't there. And so it is a real crisis then, just waiting until that last minute. And it's more expensive.
Thank you for that response, Holly. We're going to keep moving. And next is Dr. Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Dina Bishop, and I am in the Anchorage School District. I am the superintendent. I was formerly in the Mat-Su School District as a superintendent with a different name. And my name was Paramo then. So new school district, new name. That's exciting. And in Anchorage, we like to start with good things. And I want to speak to the chair. Last couple of years, you have been really working on unmanned aircraft legislation. Alaska has the first school in the state for which the pilots test was given during the school day, during a class, and 18 students passed, which was higher than the national average of all ages. And so that school is in the Anchorage School District, and it's South High. So I just want to say Alaska is first in the 21st. So for some things. So good job, South High. I am here just to share some good things that a change. And rather than speaking to our challenges, I want to share with you what we're doing to change ourselves to be more accountable to our state, to our people, to our children. And Anchorage created what's called the data dashboard to assist us in looking at data. It shines a light on the data. It's not to have a hammer on any individual, any student, any school. Certainly, we have collected data on student learning and climate connectedness, all types of data. However, it has just been numbers. We collect this and we see it as information. It doesn't become information or just stays as information until we do something with it. Then it can become wisdom and learn from it to be able to redirect our resources, redirect our influences of what's happening in our schools. In Alaska, we want our students to have the best learning experiences possible. As you've already heard, those learning experiences are changing with the 21st century. And in fact, the 21st century is already 17 years past. So we want to ensure that 21st century learning is definitely changing what we do. The purpose of the dashboard is really to take a higher level look. Again, it's not something that is drilled down to students. We have access to student data. We have access to teacher classroom data. The dashboard actually is a public portal on our website for everyone in Alaska or outside of Alaska to have access to what we're doing, to be highly transparent to our stakeholders and really you as well, those that give us money. We understand that we use other people's money to do our business. We don't make it ourselves. And every day we take care of someone else's babies. So those are the two, whether that baby is 18 years old or a 5-year-old, it's someone else's child that we have to take very seriously, the revenue for which our state provides and our local city provides, and then really show a return on that investment or a value for that investment. So if you have a chance, we'd like to share that we do look at attendance. It will graph daily the attendance rate and how many students. The goal of the Anchorage School District is to have 90%. It also has a heat map of where we are struggling with attendance problems and where we are not. All of these dashboards are drillable. You can look at your school in your neighborhood. You can look at your school in your neighborhood for girls, your school in your neighborhood for boys. Any kind of piece of data for which we can drill down race, ethnicity, sex, you can find out what it looks like. And so we have a motto that says you need to know it to grow it. And so we're honest with ourselves about how we're doing to be able to use our resources to ensure greater learning experiences in our schools. We have overall academic status, which is elementary, and it's basically on track for reading. We know there's a few bills out now in regard to making sure and ensure that students read by third grade. We take that seriously and take a look at all of our schools, and the data is published for our teachers, parents, everyone, you as well. Again, these aren't data for which I only have access. They're actually access for anyone who has data access to the internet. We also look at students with an F. We understand that our graduation rate has been increasing over the last 10 years. Anchorage is proud to say that on a four-year cohort, we are 80%, five-year cohort, 86%. However, we still have too large a number of students not graduating, and we know that one F in a child's experience in a high school and middle school can lead to non-graduation. They get behind, they lose hope, so we take a look at this. What are the courses for which we're seeing students struggle? Is there a certain demographic? How are we teaching? Again, it is not to put a spotlight on, look, that student or that teacher. It's to say, let's turn the mirror on ourselves instead of looking out the window and see what can we do differently to make sure that students are learning. And they don't all have to learn the same. We do highly value choices. Kids are different. They're going to find different careers. Our job is to help them find that career and that life goal of theirs through our system. This is just an example to demonstrate that we can break it down by school in percent of students on track, as well as heat maps again. It's just, again, if you can order something online or from the outdoorsman or whatever, sports, whatever, you can definitely look at the ASD web portal. We also use measures of academic progress, or MAP, and some of the things that our data have demonstrated is not only do students who come from low socioeconomic areas, areas of poverty struggle. That's been the beginning of Chapter 1, which is now called Title 1, about poverty in schools. The federal government provides funding for that. But we also are able to demonstrate that we have high-status schools, schools where students come into our schools at a high status, but yet they're not growing. And so we look upon ourselves to say, how do we change the learning behavior every day so that students who enter with us will at least receive a year of learning, if not more? And so what we aim for is totally the right quadrant up top. If that was to be divided into four, we want high growth and high status for all of our schools. And just in conclusion, the data dashboard, it talks about the what. Where are we? What is the data? What are the numbers? What are those assessments? It's the so what. What are we going to do about them? What are they telling us? What kind of information do we understand about our schools and how to improve them? And we are now doing the now what, where we must act for Alaska's children. And I just wanted to share something that I know is near and dear to our state legislature's heart in regard to the last 5 years for which I've been a superintendent in regard to student achievement and positive outcomes for kids. It's not just what we do, but are we paying attention to the outcome of where they are when they finish with us? Because we can only call ourselves successful when students can find success after high school. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bishop, and I'm going to be looking at that portal to at the schools where my grandchildren are attending in your district. So, question, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. Dr. Bramo, one of the questions I asked earlier dealt with the impact of what, in your case, over would be potentially over $22 million in cuts, not counting the property tax impact. Mm-hmm. We had a presentation from Ms. Beck earlier talking about, and she represents an alternative school in the district, the ABC school. There are other alternative schools in the district, lots of variety in the district. What happens when we slash $22 million from your budget, including the impact that that has on the property tax base, to your ability to, A, continue to show improvement in your dashboard, which it does show, and, B, to those alternative types of programs?
Absolutely. I will share that I don't want to freak anybody else out at home who's actually teaching kids every day, but to demonstrate what the budget does to a school system, which we are it's $750 million in Anchorage. It is a large organization, 6,000 employees, 100 schools, not to mention the number of vendors that are in our community. We're just talking about education, but it's going to impact, the ripple is going to be huge because we purchase goods and services from our state. But the governor's budget provided for flat funding with Anchorage. We all know that it's based off of ADM or AADM or your adjusted ADM. It just so happens that with the governor's budget, we saw a slight increase in revenue. So we want to say that. A slight increase in revenue, very slight, but it was because when you count your kids and the needs and run them through the formula. Yet, with the K-12 continued costs increase of just natural increases, we found a $15 million shortfall from one year to the next, given the same inputs. With that, that reduction that was already made in Anchorage was $5 million from other sources where we looked at supplies, not people, outside of people, but it was over 100 positions reduced already with the governor's budget with flat funding. So if that shines a picture on what $22 million additional would be, it would be a significant decrease. And again, these weren't, I don't want to just say teachers because we always say teachers. This was administrators. The highest percentage of reduction was right in my house, in the office, at the district office. And that still had over close to 100 teachers in schools given the folks outside of schools. So it is significant not only to what education can happen in a classroom, but it's also significant in the entire economy of the state in regard to when you have your largest school district with the funds locally and not being generated throughout. People who work in schools actually buy homes and goods as well. So I know this isn't, it's a bigger situation. I know our state understands that, but certainly education and how we do business is going to change. Significantly.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Hi.
And thank you, Dr. Bishop. So you've given us a 10,000-foot view of the effects on the administration and on the broader economy. Zooming down into the individual classroom level, what will that mean for class sizes, for graduation rates? You're much more familiar with the data than most of us are. Can you tell us what the final results might be of the Senate's proposed cuts?
Sure. If we are looking at about 22 million, we could say that 200 FTE. If we kept it as far away from the classroom as possible, we would still have to affect classes because teachers are the majority of our employees. So it would be hard to reduce by 200 without touching actual teachers who actually have a class. Presently, we are at a 21-to-1 ratio in kindergarten and a 29-to-1 ratio at 12th grade. That doesn't mean you cap. That's not a cap. That means that for every 21 kindergartners in the school district, we apply one teacher. Some schools will have 20. Other schools will have 26 in a kindergarten. That's just how it works out. It's really a mean, and it is not a class size cap. It is a metric to apply to a school. Those numbers, each of those to change is about $2 million to change each of those categories. So our class sizes would just rise, you know, astronomically compared to where we are presently. We have been looking at alternative methods where you include blended learning, other items, but certainly if you've come into classes today in Anchorage, our 5th and 6th grade probably take the brunt of the staffing because I've been in schools. I've seen it. And presently, there are about 30 to 32 kids in 5th and 6th grade. It is really difficult to put more kids in there just for the physical size of the classrooms and the desks and things. So we would be looking at least in grade levels, when you change that metric, you're adding 1 to 5 more kids to every class.
Dr. Paramo, do you count I'm sorry, Dr. Bishop.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Do you count teachers' aides as administrative employees or as when you count teachers and do those ratios?
Actually, no. We count them by the chart of accounts, which is directed by the state through deed, and you'll have teachers, and then you'll have a separate code for special education teachers. And in Anchorage, our total budget is about 50% classroom teachers. Next is 9%, which are special education teachers driven by IEPs and law. The next two are special education aides and then tutors and things like that. So they are considered in the instruction side of the house, which would go towards you know, how much really goes to classrooms. So they are defined differently, but tutors and school aides are part of instruction, but not what I'm talking about in regard to class size. But the chart of accounts does call for them to be considered instructional, not administrative, because they work with students in the classrooms.
Okay, thank you for that. And I know, just watching you over the years, that you're going to take on the challenge and you're going to do what's best for the kids. And I also know that $22 million is a sizable cut, and I don't mean to demean that in any way, but when you have a three-quarter billion-dollar budget, it's about 2 to 3%. And I, just watching you, I know you're going to do the best that you can. I wanted to ask on a statewide level, because we've been looking at trying to strengthen the virtual education in order to help students in the rural areas access great teachers. And I know you've got great teachers in your district. And is that something that you're thinking about, that you might be able, because it will actually be a way to enhance your revenue, because you would be able to, if you had some spare seats in a classroom and you could offer the class virtually with some other rural districts, that it might bring a little revenue in. Is that something that you are looking to do in the future? Are you do you have work to do to get there? Or is that something that might be in the very near future, next year or the following year, you'd be set up to?
Well, certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. We are working on influencing and just being more creative, if you will, with instruction, whether it be virtual or not, or blended, and certainly working with other school districts. One of the things that is highly important, and it goes back to your question really on entrepreneurship, is that our students are great consumers of technology, but on the other side of that is also to be great producers and designers. And so on both ends of that, we are partnering with other districts presently, and we can do it on a larger scale outside of this. But also, you had talked about technology, and coursework is one way, but also it's important to offer coding in our schools, to have students be those problem solvers and those new entrepreneurs of solving problems in the future. So it's endless. What you can do is similar to what the state is looking at, set up the parameters to allow that stuff to fly. Innovation isn't necessarily mandated. Maybe perhaps when Apollo went to get that started, it was kind of like, we need to get there. But what we did was just set up the parameters for the good people and the innovators in the state to really make things better. And that's what innovation is. We need to renew ourselves to offer something more to our kids.
Representative Johnston, and then we'll be moving on to the next speaker.
Yes. Have you been in discussions with the municipality and the assembly and school boards as far as shared services? And then do you know how that would affect your local education tax cap if you did do shared services? As you say, you're a big consumer of things other than education.
Sure. Thank you. Through the chair. We actually this year created a shared service with risk management, using the same risk management system. We are in shared services where for plowing services. So we take care of our level ones, and then level twos, the city and the district share their large equipment. It's really, you have that equipment around, you need it. We are in shared services, I'm going to forget, about four different items. We presently do, the school district now does the maintenance for the wastewater treatment center, and the city does the maintenance on the white fleet, which are the trucks, anything but buses. And so presently we have worked this year with just those small things, $3 million, for which the city and the school district saved in our joint efforts. We did look at, and I know Representative Johnston, you had talked about that transportation, the bigger picture. ASD transports 24,000 students and a day, and People Mover does 1,800. And so we still are looking at ways for which we can transport high school kids on an alternate schedule, but certainly our fleet is, and our mission is different in that area in regard to students getting to and from school. So about half of our students in ASD ride a bus every day.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bishop. And if you have more questions for any of the presenters, we can get those to them. So next is Dr. Johnson, Kristen Johnson. And we have 10 minutes left. And so, Dr. Johnson, I don't know if you can fit yours in 5 minutes, but we have Ty Mace after you, and he's our final speaker.
So. Sure. I will try to be as brief as I can. So good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kirsten Johnson-Strumpler. I am a principal at South Anchorage High School in Anchorage, and I'm also the president of the Anchorage Principals Association, which represents all K through 12 principals in the city of Anchorage. I just wanted to thank you for hearing testimony today, and I just wanted to address, there was a question about how ACSA and the different organizations work together, and the Anchorage Principals Association works hand-in-hand with ACSA. We are also a part of the state organizations that are underneath that umbrella of ACSA, whether it's elementary or secondary principals associations. So those joint position statements that you heard about earlier in testimony, I was actually on the committee that helped develop those for you, and we all have a voting member on that committee that is able to come together in a unified voice for you about public education in our state. So I just wanted to take a little bit of time to talk about that. Mostly today, I wanted to share with you how much I love being a principal and how proud I am to serve the students of Alaska. And I also wanted to share with you that the work of a principal and the scope of the work is some of the most challenging but ultimately rewarding and also very complex work. And so we talk a lot about budgets and things like that, and it becomes much more complex when those students are sitting in front of you and you have teachers that you need to help assist those students. I wanted to give you a sense of when I walk into a building as a principal, and the same as my colleagues walk into their buildings as a principal, how do we go about our day and the multitude of issues that we think about on a daily basis? They're the things that keep us up at night when we think about our students and our teachers, and the things that we're passionate about so that we can provide the best services for our students. So we ultimately look through a variety of lenses at our building as a principal. We look through an instructional lens. We are trying to provide the most rigorous curriculum to prepare our students for their future, and we ask ourselves many questions around that on a daily basis. We look through a safety and facilities aspect. When we walk into our buildings, are our facilities adequate to provide that service for our students? Do we have a safety plan in case of an emergency for our students? Have we trained our staff and students appropriately? We also look at just a general school climate lens. Are students happy and healthy when they come to us, and are they feeling good about where they're at on a daily basis? We look at it at a staffing and evaluation lens, and we really, as a principal, I feel one of the strongest things that I can do is hire great teachers to work with students. And so we are consistently working on that to attract and retain really quality educators in our buildings. And then we also work on the evaluation piece to have that continual growth for our teachers when they start out brand new to be those really expert teachers that we desire. And then we also look at it from a resources standpoint. Can we make it all happen? And I know that's what we wrestle with a lot in our state currently. And ultimately, our goal is to meet the high standards that our students and our community deserve. There's a whole variety of lenses that I could go on about in terms of employability skills, career and technical education, business partnerships. We even look at student attrition lenses, technology integration, athletics, and then we look at issues such as mental health and suicide awareness and those types of issues that we struggle with as a state. But what I really want to talk about is, and one of the more exciting things I believe as a principal is the innovation lens, and you heard Dr. Bishop mention that a little bit. The ground school example that she gave is actually at my high school in South Anchorage, and we're really proud to be the first school to offer that unmanned aerial course to our students, and actually the FAA is going to model our program for the rest of the country to provide that service to other high schools. So we're not just the first in the state, we're the first in the nation, and I think that's pretty amazing. A couple of other examples that I just wanted to share with you. We had a multitude of South and Eagle River High School students volunteer for Beans Cafe. They created pottery for the Empty Bowl Project, and then they also helped volunteer at that event to provide services for our homeless population in the Anchorage area. And I really just think that speaks volumes about their commitment to our community here in the state. I also wanted to share with you a Service High School example. Students just participated in a healthcare biomedical competition. They have a career and technical education pathway there, and they learn about all sorts of different health occupation careers, and that's a need in our state as well. When they competed, 50 students competed at the state level, and 40 of those students at Service are moving on to the national competition. And I just think it speaks a lot of it speaks positively to how we're preparing our students if they're ready for that national competition. I also wanted to share with you, one of my South High School juniors owns a business in town. He's the ripe age of 16, and he's already a business owner. He owns 907 Boards, and he has a passion for skateboarding. And he has partnered with the Eagle River High School Adventure Club, and they essentially take in students who are new to our state and are military dependents, and they get them out and about in the state of Alaska to do all sorts of things, and longboarding is a popular event, so he works on that. So he's 16, owns a business. We support him with credits that he can obtain in high school because he is a business owner and put those hours in, but we've also made him a business partner at 16 years old so that he can do that work with Eagle River High School. So I just wanted to share some of those innovative practices that are going on in the city of Anchorage and our high schools, and just really encourage you to help us and support us in continuing those efforts. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Kirsten. Very excited. Ty Mace, if you could come up. We're down to a couple of minutes. And one of the things that I'm going to do, because I keep seeing all these cameras pop up, is I'm going to take a picture of you all so that Lisa can get it out. All right. So go ahead and begin, Ty.
Madam Chairman, for the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Skiles-Parody. We wanted Ty is not testifying. He is our chairman and president of the Alaska State Policy Research Alliance. So it is it's a policy working group within the Superintendent's Association that works hand-in-hand with our Northwest Lab. And we wanted to close this presentation today by sharing a couple of slides with regard to turnover, which is another issue that this committee has been very interested in. We started the year this way, sharing our shortages in education at all levels, not just teachers, which we are historically familiar with, but at principal levels and at superintendent levels. And our research policy lab has three slides to kind of close our presentation. I do want to share with you, we have over 100 people here for the next couple days. I hope that you will take some time to speak with them about their individual stories in their districts. I know they're anxious to continue to share with you, and thank you so much for this opportunity today.
Dr. Parody, I just want to say if any members need to leave because of the time we normally end at 9:30, it's not because they don't like what you're saying. They just have other appointments. So go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee, for your time this morning. For the record, my name is David Stevens, and I'm a research manager for the Regional Education Laboratory Northwest, which is in Portland, Oregon, through Education Northwest. You may recall that my colleague and I, Ashley Pearson, presented to your committee in February of this year. And again, the information that we generated was through a collaborative effort through ASPRA, which includes REL Northwest. It also includes the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, and also includes the University of Alaska, in addition to ASSA. And I'm here today to follow up on a couple of points from our earlier discussion on educator retention in Alaska. So in February, we looked at district turnover rates for teachers, principals, and superintendents. And one of the takeaways from our presentation was that the percent of teachers and principals new to their district has remained relatively stable over time. But superintendents' turnover rates are higher than principals and teachers, and they can vary dramatically from year to year. So again, we see in this five-year period from 2013 to 2017, superintendents' turnover rates fluctuate from a low of 4% in 2013 to a high of 43% in 2015 and back down to 24% in the most recent year. And over the five-year period, 72% of the districts had superintendents change at least once. And just to kind of briefly put this into a national perspective, a typical superintendent will stay at their district for about 3 to 4 years. All right. So in response to some of your questions that we received from you about this issue, we wanted to begin to explore if and how leadership turnover matters for various outcomes. And our initial reviews find that both principal and superintendent turnover have substantial impacts on schools and districts, right? So, for example, the longer that a superintendent stays with the district, the more likely student achievement will improve. And you can begin to see positive impacts on superintendent tenure as early as 2 years into their time with the district. In addition, there's a greater likelihood that new education initiatives will be successful the longer that a superintendent stays with the district, because these efforts usually take 5 to 7 years to really mature. Similarly, for principals, to influence student outcomes, they must remain in schools for several years. And this is partly due to the fact that principal turnover, principal departure, can actually have a negative effect on student achievement, with declines lasting up to about 2 years, right? And the longer that principals stay in the same school, the less likely that teachers are to leave as well. So just in sum, leadership matters, and we find the best outcomes in schools and districts with stable leadership.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you very much, David. And with that, we will be wrapping up. And if you have a question, you can submit it in writing or chat with folks afterwards. Just to announce for Senate members, those of us that still remain, we will be meeting Wednesday at 8 a.m. and have four bills, SCR 5, Alaska Reads Day, HB 86, Student Loan Default, HB 135, School Construction Grant Program, and HB 64, Reading Proficiency Task Force. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is our last joint education meeting of this session, and I want to thank Senator Hughes and Joshua Banks, her aide, for all their hard work this session. I think this has been one of the most collaborative House and Senate education committees in recent history, and I'm proud to be part of that. I'm looking forward to working with Senator Hughes over the interim. I know there are quite a few complex Senate education bills that we're waiting for from your body, and there are really a lot of exciting ideas in those bills. I'm also hoping to plan a meeting over the interim that will remove Department of Education and Health and Social Services silos in funding, so we can really look into how we're spending money on children from birth to age 5. I'm hoping that the Senate will join in on those conversations over the interim. So again, thank you, Senator Hughes, and all the members of the Senate Education Committee for making this a productive session.
And thank you, and that was very, very kind of you. I didn't have any statement such prepared, but I have similar mutual feelings. So thank you very much, everyone, and have a great start to your week. And we will adjourn at 9:34.